Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robin Hood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Well, thanks, Marshall. If the credentials for being an artistic director of a theater company are being a practitioner of the theater, and I'm not sure they are, but if they are, then my guest today really qualifies. Alan Burrows is the artistic director of Shakespeare & Company in Lenox, but behind that, he has a career as both actor and director. Currently, he has one of the four roles in the favorably received production of God of Carnage in Lenox that runs through October 8th. He's with me today to talk about God of Carnage and what it's like being an artistic director of one of the most established regional theaters in the country coming up on its 40th anniversary. Welcome, Alan.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Great.
Now, I just learned that you've added a performance this coming week. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I woke up last week and was once again kind of met in the morning with pictures of Puerto Rico and all the hurricane devastation, and that was coming off of reading all about the previous hurricanes, and I thought, you know, we gotta do something about this. So I added an extra performance of God of Carnage next Thursday, the 5th, at 7:30 p.m. We hope people will come join us for that. Even if you see the show, we'd love to have you back. It will all the proceeds from that show will go to help with hurricane relief. For all these hurricanes, so the charity that we chose was One America, which is was started by the five living former American presidents, and we thought that that would be a good avenue to direct those funds, and we hope that people will come out and support the show and support that effort, because really, you know, it's turned into a humanitarian crisis, as you all know, down there. And we want to do something as minimal as it may be from up here in the north, you know. I have friends in the south who say, wow, how do you deal with all that snow up there? And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm not ever wondering whether my house is going to be standing the next day. I mean, we did have Hurricane Irene up here. Certainly in Vermont, and you know, that was pretty devastating. I have a cabin up there, and both my neighbors lost their houses. So, you know, I just think with the way things are in the environment, you know, we gotta take note. And one of the ways we're doing that is to do an extra performance of God of Carnage. It's unfortunate the name that the word Carnage is in this hurricane relief effort show, but that's just how it fell out.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, good for you, and better for the people in the Caribbean. So let's talk about God of Carnage. It's written by Yasmina Reza, originally in French, and then it was translated by Christopher Hampton. It's an excellent, excellent translation. First performed in London in 2008. And then it got the Olivier Award, and then it came to New York, it got the Tony Award. So I guess the question, you're both the act, you play one of the roles in it, of the four, and as an artistic director, you had a hand in selecting it for the season's program. So why did you fit it into the 2017 season?
Well, I found it kind of Shakespearean in its relationships. It's very close to the bone. It gets very raw. It's very funny. In just how we bounce off of each other, it felt like it was fitting to our aesthetic, in spite of the fact that it's a very modern play. I wanted to push some better-known playwrights this year, and so that kind of had a track record that was well established. So. And so we went down that road, and it's turned out to be kind of its own endeavor, and it's been a lot of fun. Can you hold on just a second?
As a way to set this up, your character actually uses the expression God of Carnage in the play. So can you tell us to what does that refer, and basically who are these four people that find themselves colliding with each other
right.
for 90 minutes?
Right. Well, I play, coincidentally, the role of Alan, a lawyer. He just happens to have my same name, which is kind of a bummer because he's a bit of a jerk. But it's fun to play jerks. It's always fun to play jerks. And then there's my wife's name is Annette, and then there's Veronica and Michael. And these two, you know, some of these ethical questions come up quite quickly because the couple's sons have met in a schoolyard, and one hit the other in the face with a stick and broke a couple teeth. And this is kind of a gathering to resolve in a civil fashion, basically, I think they're writing up a couple statements for the insurance companies, this conflict. Well, it immediately devolves because there are some different points of view on how one should really raise one's children. And that comes to the forefront quite quickly, and then they debate it. So,
So that's and God of Carnage is an expression that the lawyer, your character Alan, uses to say, hey, wait a minute, we're not as civilized as we really think we are.
Right. It's kind of a survival of the fittest question too. And I think we come up against these these debates a lot, and especially now in society, we come up against these arguments of like, well, it's the normative versus descriptive argument, right? And you find in terms of the political arguments, what it comes down to is one person will say, well, that's not how it should be. And another person says, that's just the way it is. It's kind of, and the descriptive is, well, that's the way society works. You know, you do what you can, or you fall off the grid, or you fall off the edge of the table. And then there are others who will say, yeah, but society is set up so that we really are meant to support each other. And that's the dividing line. That's really the thumbnail of the arguments around this play, what it comes down to. And my character is like, hey, you know what? You do what you can. It's a tough world. And if you can survive in it, good for you. Otherwise, you're one of the forgotten ones. And there's another character who says, yeah, but that's not how it should be. That's not the way society works. And that's the bottom line of the argument is that I come back at her and say, yeah, that is how. If you really look at it through an honest lens, that is how society works. So what was most frightening for me was that I kind of generally fall with the latter argument, just in terms of how society and civilization should kind of take care of oneself. But I found myself identifying with some of the things, or actually agreeing with some of the things that my character was putting forward. And that's what scared me the most about doing this play.
Interesting.
Was that, you know, as someone who kind of really believes in infrastructure and making sure that kind of we take care of the people most in need, but this guy does not put forward that argument at all.
Just joining us, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer, and my guest today is Alan Burroughs. He's the artistic director of Shakespeare and Company, and also one of the featured players in a four-character play taking great reviews up at Shakespeare and Company called The God of Carnage. You know, the play is 90 minutes without an intermission, and it really unfolds seamlessly, as all well-written and well-directed plays do. But, you know, as someone who goes to the theater a lot and studies what's going on and observes what's going on in the stage, I have a sense that this really isn't a very easy play to do. The characters have got to shed layers and layers of skin. They've got to get drunk while they're doing it. Plus, you've got some very physical, and I'm not going to be a spoiler here, some really extraordinary physical turns in the play. So I guess how really rigorous is it to get all those pieces to fit together in such a perfectly timed way?
Right. Yeah, you have to line it up. And that was really a credit to the director, Reggie Leif, because he was indefatigable in how he worked moment to moment. He really, there was never any time where he was like, well, yep, that's good enough. You know, we'll leave it there. You know, it was like he always, right, he used every last minute of our time to really kind of keep boring down into those moments. And he had a real surgical approach. And, you know, I always was so terrified that if I messed up a moment, I was like, oh, no, Reggie's going to make us go back again. And, you know, it was he left no stone unturned. And with an 86-minute play, you really have to shoot the gap on kind of getting it right. All the nuance and all those kind of towering emotions and coming up against each other. It is fun to play, I will say that, you know, kind of tearing into each other like that, being that brutally honest. What I was stunned by also was how carnivorous really the reactions have been from the audience. They really, you know, we felt a kind of visceral release happening from the audience as these people basically say whatever they want to each other or whatever they feel they need to say to each other to get to the truth of the matter. And we live in that age now where the gloves are off and off in public discourse. And so, you know, we're even in a new environment than when we chose to do this play, which was, you know, over a year ago. So,
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Actors say that they can pretty much take the temperature of the audience just within the couple of minutes of getting the play going. So how do you measure, you know, the visceral kind of import that the audience is going to bring to what you're going to get through for the next 86 minutes?
Right. It's kind of leveled out a little bit. Our preview audiences, whenever you're getting a strong laugh in a moment, you wait till that laughter peaks and then you continue so that you can still be heard, but you keep the momentum up. But really, some of the laughter was coming so hard and vociferously in the previews that we had to just start cutting right through it. Otherwise, I was like, we were gonna miss the arc of the story. It was, and we weren't playing it for laughs. The key to this is you play the reality of the situation, and you play, you know, the relationships. But it's not a sitcom, this play. But it is, you know, there's some of the things that come up, the reflections on the human condition and relationships that really make it very funny.
Yeah, I almost found myself laughing at what was being written rather than what was being said.
Yeah.
Which was a way of laughing at what the playwright had to say rather than laughing at the characters. Because in many ways, the characters are really not a really likable lot of people.
There's not really one of them that you'd want to necessarily spend a whole lot of time.
Yeah, and you kind of play a corporate jerk through most of it. So I guess my question is, part of the trick is how do you get an audience to relate to you as a character, or as in this case, as four characters, which, you know, the people in the audience wouldn't want to go out and have dinner with afterwards, after the play.
I don't think you can care. You know, one of the pitfalls as an actor is hoping that the audience will like you, because you're really not serving the text. You know, playwrights write extreme situations and emotions and relationships, and that's why we go and see them. And because in civil society, you often can't act out like this, but you can on the stage, and then we can reflect on what it is that you can take from it. But Yeah, I just think you have to play the truth of the situation, and you have to make it really about taking a close look on who we are, and that's and then you just go for it and not worry about it. I mean, I prefer playing bad guys. So for me, it's kind of right in my wheelhouse. I don't know how to play a good guy.
You know, I was going through your bio, and one of the things I didn't mention, besides this incredible background that you've got in directing and acting, both in Shakespeare and then another serious drama, you had a part in Manchester by the Sea, the movie that was so popular last year. And I'm trying to visualize which character you were while we're in the middle of this.
I was the priest. My big scene got cut. It was too. You talk about not being able to handle it. My big scene, if you saw the movie, and I don't think I'm giving anything away, but there was a scene in the graveyard over the three small coffins, and the director, and it went on for some time, and it was a scene of a priest not being able to hold it together over the death of these three children. And Kenneth Lonergan, who's, his history's in the stage, and so he goes for the brutal truth of any given situation. And that was a hard-hitting film anyway, but I think that scene ended up to be too much. So you only see me for a few brief moments in the movie. But as with so many things, your scene, the proverbial, ends up on the cutting room floor. Right. So that's what happened to that one.
The program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. The guest today, Alan Burroughs, the artistic director of Shakespeare and Company, appearing in the four-character play, God of Carnage, on the Lenox stage until October 8th with a special performance for Hurricane Relief this Thursday, October 5th. You mentioned, Alan, that God of Carnage, like all elements of a program for a season, was chosen almost more than a year ago. And now it has more kind of cultural traction than it did back then. I guess the question is, in selecting now for this summer season or the full season of 2018, are you looking for things that have political relevance? Are you looking for things that have cultural traction? Or are you trying to anticipate perhaps things that people will just escape into, given how, well, frankly, dismal the state of affairs is?
Right. I think my approach is that I prefer to do things in reflection of the current landscape rather than in reaction to, because the moment, because we plan things so far in advance that it can limit you in terms of the larger resonance of what you're putting out there. You want people to be able to come to your programming and take it in a way that is meaningful for them, but also can provide diversion if they so choose. So it's for us, it's really about the resonance of the experience rather than, this is just exactly like the news. We get a lot of news. We all read a lot of news. I'm not big for going in for just straight ahead frothy entertainment. I feel like people's time is valuable, and froth can be fun. It's got to be really fun for it to qualify, like kind of boisterous and bawdy and really far out there for me to say, yeah, let's do this. We want to spend that time kind of reaching. Even with God of Carnage, I've been, as we were putting it up, we were about to walk on stage before the first performance, and I was just shaking my head with John Croy because we had no idea what the reaction was going to be. Mm-hmm. We thought, well, they'll either, we thought there might be, tumbleweeds blowing around out there for the silence, but it was quite the opposite. It turned out to be quite cathartic for a lot of our audience members.
As you've pointed out, you can either laugh along with it, or when you think about it, you can almost cry about it. It's an interesting choice. Now, you've spent a career both on stage as an actor and sort of off stage as director. I'm very interested in how directors work and relate to actors. So I guess the question I'd like to ask is, from a director's point of view, What makes a good actor? And from an actor's point of view, what's the best attribute of a good director?
Right. Well, I think that oftentimes what really good acting comes down to is listening, you really can accomplish most of what you set out to do by actively listening, because words always come last. They're always the last thing that arrives when you're trying to put thoughts together, short of running at the mouth. So I think if you're out there listening, then it has a way of pulling the audience in. It was funny. I just stumbled across this interview with Alan Rickman the other day, and he was talking about how, the late, great Alan Rickman was talking about how important it is just to be listening out there. Because then you have plenty of time to speak. You know you've got your script. But what isn't scripted is the listening. And we often forget that, because actors are so often clamoring to be heard. For me, as an actor, what I like in a director is to set up a framework, give it a context, and then just let the actors kind of find their way through this material organically, because that's where the real discoveries happen. So do I have the same head as a director as I do as an actor? Probably, yeah. I like to think that the most important thing is, as a director also, is empathy. So, when you're asking an actor to do something and it involves, something that's particularly challenging, let them find it. Mm-hmm. And don't force it. And, the hardest thing is when you come across a director who, what I call toy soldier directors, who pretty much, from the first day of rehearsal have laid everything out with their toy soldiers at home. And they've directed the whole play already, and it really has nothing to do with these incredibly talented actors who are there, ready, willing, and waiting to discover what they're going to put forward together. Because it's really about what comes out of the process that's most important.
Right. For those who may not be familiar with Shakespeare and Company, I mean, you have Shakespearean repertory through the summer season and through the full theatrical season, and then you have contemporary plays too. In putting together the season, do you balance the choices that you're making for the new or the contemporary plays with what you've already chosen for Shakespeare, or how does that interrelay?
It's an interesting dialectic. You kind of thematically... Our marketing department always wants to know, well, what's the theme of the season? And, of course, this last season was mischief, magic, and music. I like to think that you just kind of have a lot of brainstorming sessions with a bunch of people sitting around a table, and then what arises out of it is... kind of something that no one has mentioned directly, and you just kind of, it's like low-hanging fruit. You're like, oh, there's the theme. That's what we were talking about, or that's what's important, or why it's important we're doing this material. Because we do provide a refuge, but we also provide kind of a thinking room for people. So that's kind of how we set out to do it. In terms of the new plays, a question of how powerful is the language? How strong are the relationships? What are the characters like? Are they good, strong characters? Are they interesting? And how is our audience going to be affected by them? And so that's the criteria aren't that much different. I like to think that we have 37 Shakespeare plays to choose from, but generally in any given season, we like to think we have about 1,100 modern plays to choose from.
Right. Shakespeare probably gets reinterpreted more than any other playwright, and probably produced more than any other playwright in the English-speaking world. Mm. So you've been familiar with some of the more provocative or controversial interpretations of Shakespeare. And lately we've seen what I'm going to call an Ivo von Hovism that's taken over a lot of directing of plays to try to reinvent them in terms of minimalist kinds of reinterpretations. Do you think there are limits to how far you can go in reinterpretation, or do you think, where does it fall out of context?
I always shy away from the notion of interpretation, because I think the language speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And when you have a cast of characters, all of whom are powerful actors and strong individuals, that something in that rehearsal process is going to take shape all on its own if you provide a simple context. Like with The Tempest that I directed this summer, I set it in a time frame, and in the 1890s, and then set it in a place north of the 40th parallel, somewhere off of Nova Scotia. I wanted to make it different than the usual Caribbean setting. And, you kind of go down that avenue of, like, this is what I'm thinking for our time and place. And then you forget about it, and then, the costumes support the idea. But otherwise, you just let the actors flesh it out in terms of relationship. But imposing concepts on Shakespeare, I get kind of saddened by it, because I think that it really overlooks all that valuable source material that you have sitting there time and again. It's very elastic. It's always kept warm. It's like it's right there on the hot plate. You just got to pull it right off and serve it up. And to muck with it too much really does it a disservice.
Yeah.
You can call me a simpleton in that way, but I still maintain that the text and the relationships and the character work is all right there. All you just have to do is let it run.
Yeah. So. I mean, you're making a good case for let the playwright's text speak for itself. Mm. Do you think that notion is falling out of fashion these days, with a lot of, the kinds of interpretations that you see a lot on Broadway now with minimalist stuff?
It may have. I mean, I think, far be it from me to tell other people how to direct their plays.
Sure,
it's just not something that I find that I'm attracted to, because there's so much truth yet to be mined and discovered in these plays, given the situation that you find yourself in on any certain day.
Right.
When I'm directing a scene and actors just start rambling through the text, I'm like, no, stop, go back. How is that? What is the tone of that? How is that affecting you on your bones when you're breathing? What is the real truth that you're going for that? And then it can lead to a lot of meaningful discussion. And you're like, oh, that's your truth. Okay, I see. All right, yeah. Well, let's run with that, because it really always comes back to whatever's most truthful for the actor, because they're the ones speaking the words. So.
Right.
And it has to go through them, because ultimately it has to be in communion with the audience.
And on that note, Alan, let's run with God of Carnage through October 8th in Lenox at Shakespeare and Company. Thank you very much for coming on Off Script.
Thank you so much.
Okay, have fun with the rest of the run. My guest has been Alan Burrows, Artistic Director of Shakespeare and Company, appearing in God of Carnage running through October 8th in Lenox, the program Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. Until the next time. Be well.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.